You're listening to today's Boondoggle with your host, the one and only Bill Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle, and we are going down the memory lane hole of getting ready to celebrate Peabody's Day with two of the men that either kept me alive or just enabled bad habits in my life. I was down there. Dan Cole and Josh Cabot. What's going on, guys?
What's up?
Great, man. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Doing good, man. I'm able to fit into this shirt still. It's like painted on me almost, but it's like a large. I'm surprised I was able to find it and get it on, but
it looks good. It looks good. It looks good.
Yeah, man. I wanted to represent, you know.
80s night.
Yep. I know we wanted to talk. We talked about doing this a while ago. And, you know, I figure, well, the building's gone now. The evidence has been destroyed. I figure the statute of limitations have passed.
We burned all the tapes.
Yeah. So I think we're good. You know, I think it's safe to go down and dig up the dirty dirt of the history of Peabody's down under. So I wanted to ask, like, though, usually when I have guys on for the first time, I want to ask you a little background questions before we get up to Peabody. So originally, what did you want to be when you grew up? And Dan, you can go first, and then Josh.
A professional football or baseball player. Guaranteed. That's what I wanted to be. And if I had a backup and in business management and real estate, I wanted to run my own business or be in real estate. That was a backup plan to being a professional athlete. And I ended up doing my backup plan.
Yeah, you mentioned the hurdles earlier at the fairgrounds. So it's like, I think you had to do the backup plan, right? You weren't the most athletic.
Yeah, I thought I could make that jump. It was only like 15 feet, and I thought I could make it in over the barricade and into the crowd. It took me 7 times.
And how about you, Josh?
I think I was working as a cook mostly throughout high school. Then I went to culinary school while Dan and I were in college together. And I was going the route of the restaurateur. So I was a chef and going to open up some restaurants. And then Dan and I got together and we had the cockamamie idea at 22 years old to buy a nightclub. You know, we were right place, right time, a little bit of hard work, a little bit of luck. And before we knew it, we were the youngest holders of a liquor license in the state of Ohio. But it was either a good thing or a bad thing.
Depending on which side you're on.
We're here now to talk about it, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you guys met in college and stuff, right? You're what, roommates or in the same fraternity, or how'd that?
No,
middle school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we met in middle school. And then we played sports together, football and wrestling in high school, well, middle school and high school. And then we moved in together in college. We went to Akron University. We started a rave production company where we threw raves back in like 97. Our first one was at Peabody's called Just Dance on August 23rd on Zeb's birthday. It was Zeb's birthday in 1997 was our first event. And then we did a big one. Yeah, the old Peabody's, the Peabody's down under, and then not that one, that was one on the 21st. Yeah, the one on the flats. And I became the general manager of that one. I ran it for about 2.5 years while Zeb was cooking with Lola's with Michael Simon. And then I was like looking at his arms, and he had all these burn marks on his arms from cooking. And I was like, you want to go have those burn marks on your arms? You want to go party with me? We should go have some fun together.
Well, I think we'll make some money. We were throwing raves, so we were having success as rave promoters, and that kind of segued us into club owners. So we were we were already kind of in the club scene and throwing shows and parties.
G Spot 2 is part of our down payment to buy the place.
We threw a show at, was it the one we
Metropolis? Trilogy Metropolis, same place.
Yeah, we threw a show at Trilogy, and that we made enough money to put the down payment of Peabody's down.
Nice.
That was with Kandow, right? DJ Xavier. Well,
that's another story. That's pretty funny. We threw a party for him. That was another story. But that was a good, very good friend of ours. Very good friend. We threw a party called Kandow once.
Yeah, because I was good friends with his brother Joe.
We were dear friends with Steven.
Yeah. Now, so you guys, you were the general manager at Peabody's, but then you guys did that rave and then you became the owners then, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yep. And then like
Dan was the GM and he was booking the old Peabody's down under in the flats while I was working as a chef at Lola in Tremont, but we were throwing raves simultaneously. Our night that we were working day jobs and then we were raving and partying at night and throwing parties. And then we eventually made enough money to put it down on the club when we had the opportunity from Dan's brother to purchase the club.
We turned sleep partying was non-existent into a business
back then.
Well, the reason the opportunity came up, it was the death of the East Bank of the Flats was March 1st of 2000. They shut down all the clubs. My brother had just sold Heaven and Earth for like $420,000 that day. And then that Monday, the deal had unwound. They ended up getting the place for like $120,000 instead of $420,000. It was like they lost like $300,000. It was crazy amount of money that he lost from it. And he moved to Los Angeles and started a production company. And me and Zeb ended up buying Peabody's because we gave him his money and he had his car packed and drove to freaking California. City of Cleveland shut him down. And then he won in the city of Cleveland because they shut him down illegally. It was a pop in the ice tray. Everybody was over 21. It was just a conspiracy. Michael White and like a bunch of the inspectors almost went to jail because they literally purged themselves in court. It was the whole thing. We were in Europe with Mushroom Head and they showed us a magazine. They're like, look, your brother won $450,000 in the city of Cleveland for civil rights and freaking, they shouldn't have shut his club down. And then it got overturned. And then eventually he got paid from negligence from the attorneys from putting it in the wrong court. And the investors got paid. He made like no money, but it was that's how we got the opportunity to buy Peabody's because the city of Cleveland wanted to do crazy things at the East Bank of the Flats, and that's why it took 6 years and then delay so people didn't go to jail.
Wow.
Yep. Got that. Yep. Bill?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So you guys bought it though as all that was happening to the flats, so you knew you had to move immediately.
Yeah, we had 2 months to buy the place. We actually bought it on April 20th. We bought it on 420 and took over our lease on May 1st. Easy to remember those days.
And then did you guys already like have the next location over by Rascal House like lined up?
Brother had moved it. Actually, the day Peabody's opened with Tony Lang on March 1st was the same day that the East Bank of the Flats got raided. Simultaneously, the grand opening of the club behind you was the same exact day that the East Bank of the Flats got raided.
So Dan's brother had secured the new space, but they hadn't signed a lease or signed anything yet. Or maybe they
did. No, they did. They had a lease. Agreement. We should have fucking signed their lease. It was assignable, and Wrangles ripped us off for $120,000 because we were 22 years old. I was 23 and Zeb was 22. He got us for $120,000 on a lease that all we had to do was really – my brother's like, stop, listen to your brother. And we're like, no, we're going to own Peabody's. Yay, it doesn't kick in for 3 years. What's 3 years from now? 3 years kicks in, and we $120,000 later that guy got us for. Rest in peace, Mr. Frangos.
So they had already moved it, but we just kind of assumed it because they wanted out so bad. So we signed a new lease.
Signed a new lease, even though their lease was only for like 2 months or something, because they wanted us to be tied into us instead of signing with Dan and John. Because Dan Bliss and John Mahalik had a lease already that was already attached. He tried, and he's an old man, and he got some young guys that were about to own a liquor license and a concert club, and we were really happy. We was like a wet dream. It's like, of course you're going to get us to do it.
So you started, you're a GM, and you were booking. And then, Josh, when you came in, what were you doing originally?
I was working for Michael Simon at Lola Bistro in Tremont. And I quit when we had the opportunity to buy Peabody's. I quit. I put my 2 weeks in, basically, and I quit that job. And no management experience whatsoever. I had been a line cook, basically, you know, my whole life. And we threw raves for a little bit, but I pretty much got thrust into the operations role of running, you know, this 5,000 or whatever, a large operation, $1 million a year operation. So it was quite a whirlwind.
We ended up turning into a $2 million operation by the time we sold it. We were on pace to gross $2 million that year with the three clubs.
But we got thrust into it pretty quickly. It was a college education, to say the least.
Oh, I would say, man, damn. So, yeah, I used to hang at the one in the flats. I got in some trouble down there. I didn't remember, though, who was, like, the owner at that time. But then, you know, I knew, you know, it was like it became like a home away from home when you guys were running it up by.
Before John and Dan was Tom and Dewey. So it was Tom and Dewey. They were the founders. Then John Mahalik and Dan Bliss bought it, which John was my brother. Then we bought it off of John and Dan, and we sold it to Chris and Derek and Frank. Well, Frank was our partner, and then with Chris and Derek, they all became partners. They merged together, but me and Zeb were partners, and then we sold it to their shares.
Nice.
That's and how then, the whole history of Peabody's. Those were the owners.
So let's talk about, you know, then you guys were the owners. You're running the clubs and stuff. What are some of your fondest memories or accomplishments do you feel you guys had during your time of ownership and running it?
I'll let Zeb go first.
I don't know if I even remember my accomplishments or fond memories. We're taking a trip down memory lane here. Well, I remember we really turned out we were kind of still in the rave scene when we first took over. I transitioned, we owned it for 5 years. I kind of went from raver to rocker, you know, over the course of those 5 years, I remember. But I remember when we first started booking the club, we started doing these Tuesday night DJ battles. And, you know, like, who goes out on a Tuesday, you know, anymore? It's like Tuesdays were a dead night, but we started promoting these Tuesday night DJ battles and bringing DJs in and, you know, having these events. And we were literally getting, you know, 800 to 1,000 people in our club for these Tuesday night DJ battles. So that early on, that's kind of what sticks out in my mind, is we were like the it place. We were the it club when we first took over, as far as the place to be. You know, we were these young kids coming in and promoting these shows. And I think it was just cool how we kind of turned it into the place to be. And that's one of my early memories of having success at Peabody's, of turning it into this, like, just a cool, like, almost this awesome dance club with, you know, thousands of people coming every month to enjoy a random Tuesday night. And I thought that was pretty cool.
That yeah, awesome. And
it probably helped being there right by a college campus too, you know?
Yeah.
A little bit, but not as much as you would think.
And then a few years later, I don't know if we can talk about how it exactly got started, because it was kind of a funny way on how it got started, but then we did the same thing with '80s night in the Pirates Cove, where
that was Plain Dealer Club Night of the Year 4 years in a row for the state of Ohio.
Yeah, also on Tuesday. So we had we launched the Pirates Cove, a little side room, basically, and we booked it almost as a separate club. So we had two different clubs under one roof, and both, you know, we had kind of a club scene going on in Peabody's, and then we had '80s night with literally, 600 underage kids, pretty for the most part. partying in on a Tuesday night in this little room drinking 40-ounce Miller High Lights. It was quite a scene.
Remember when Joe came up with only undies nights where people would run around in their underwear? We were like, yeah. Now that's a good idea, Joe. Yeah. That's a good idea.
The stuff that we did, it's just, you know, it's like you don't see the brazenness anymore. People don't have the creativity or, you know, people get up, too many people get offended, but
Guys would be canceled.
Yeah. I'm glad we got to live, you know, in
before social media
period of time we did. Yeah. Oh my God. If social media had been around, we'd be in jail probably.
Oh yeah. All of us. I remember like after going to events and then like, taking my film, you know, if I took pictures that night, taking my film to like Drug Mart to get it developed and always getting the stink eye when I get my pictures handed back to me, some of the shit that was on there.
We'd have a lot of Steve-O followers.
Yeah.
With my favorite stuff as far as accomplishments go is one of the things just buying the club to begin with and just getting all to be the owner of Peabody's. Still to this day, it's one of the biggest achievements of my life, you know. Being Mr. Peabody's was just so much fun, being able to book the clubs. Like, literally, I booked the bands at Peabody's for 8 years. So, me and Zeb owned it for five and a half of those years, and it was incredible. That just alone was just so much fun. But then we had, like he said, the nights we built, like the Monday night Derek Hess night, the Tuesday night DJ battles, the Tuesday night 80s night, the Wednesday night 90s nights, the college ID nights we did. It was just, we literally... We turned it out, and the locals played Fridays and Saturdays. We made the Nationals play when we could fit them in, you know, because we were such in demand. And it was just, you know, the biggest month we had with the three venues, with Rockstar, Peabody's, and Pirates Cove. We booked 110 events in 1 month. There's 30 days. It was 30 days in that month. We booked 110 shows. There's only 90 events in all three venues. We did 110 because of early show, late shows, and fucking battle of the bands, and you name it. You know, we just were very creative, and it was a scheduling thing, but it was also about just freedom of being you. You know, one Robert Ritchie, like, he would piss on himself and wear a raw chicken for underwear, and we were like, you can't freaking kill a live chicken on stage. That was part of our rules. You couldn't what do you call it when you kill something on stage, or what do you call it? I forget. It was like a seance type of thing.
Yeah. It's some voodoo shit
basically. We're like, no, you can't do that. So then he comes in with it dead already on his fucking cock. Let's say, yeah, sacrifice. That's what I meant. You can't sacrifice shit on stage. You can't do that. And we had the wildest. We dealt with the craziest people on the planet underneath that roof. And it didn't matter if you were a billionaire or if you were homeless, literally, in that place, we took care of you. And it was awesome.
Literally.
Yeah, you guys had one living there for a while, right?
Yeah, we had a guy under stairs. We had a guy living under stairs.
literally.
Yeah, no, I forgot what his name was.
The richest people in the Cleveland Browns players to really rich people that would come and be like, what's going on here? Like, how are you guys doing this? How is this even possible? And then we'd be like, you know, we know some people. We're fun guys.
We're too young to care.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, it was just you guys back then. There's no like spouse and children and stuff, you know. It gets a little risky then, you know.
we didn't have anybody to answer to, literally. My mother never gave me rules. And so it was a good time.
And then what would you guys say is like probably one of your like worst memories from running the place?
Selling it, probably, but
selling it, but also probably the
IRS bill.
We got, yeah, admissions tax, but like probably physically, like from a physical standpoint of like a really bad night was the night we got taken over and we got held hostage behind by the concert goers when we were throwing.
Oh, the hip hop. That was what was her name? Lee, what was the hip hop artist? I can't believe I'm missing the name. Aaliyah. Somebody. No, anyways, yeah. I rented out the club, and the guy didn't have enough money to do the whole bar thing upstairs with the VIP.
When the VIP and then they rooms didn't... were like the place to be, and he like these hip hop promoters would sell VIP room tickets, but
it wasn't that bad.
I told Seb,
I'll be right back. I left you. Remember, I'm like, I'll be right back. I'll go get security. And he had to hold the fort down as they were whipping bottles at his head. And I was like, I'll be right back.
They started stealing the liquor and running. And
they took over. We got the club back shortly, about 30 minutes later. We got the club back in control. It took us about 30 minutes, though, and we confiscated about 80 bottles of liquor. Good times. For me, I don't remember a bad time. I'm trying to think.
When you got your nose broken once.
It's St. Patrick's Day. This guy was headbutting Zeb, and you're supposed to say, calm down, I work here, and get him, call me out the door. But he was my buddy, and I did the wrong procedure, and I grabbed another security guard, kind of dragged the guy out a little bit by his face, and then threw him out the door. And then, so he came back after I was throwing out the next guy and punched me right in the face, gave me a bloody nose. I ran two blocks, tackled his ass, carried him back to the club and got him arrested. I thought he was going to have to pay for it, went to Cleveland Clinic, got me cleaned up, didn't break my nose after all, but he never ended up paying. Actually, I paid like $650 to get that all cleaned up, but it is what it is. That was a bad moment. That was a bad moment. Remember when Carl Monday was after us? Carl Monday was after us because fucking Eminem sent a look. We did the D12 after party. Didn't advertise Eminem at all. D12 after party. Everybody from D12 showed up. Eminem, it was such a big party. Eminem put his lookalike in there with real tattoos and everything. The paparazzi shows up taking pictures. And we don't advertise Eminem being there. Eminem's lookalike hangs out with everybody and tells everybody what's going on and everything in the club. And all the VIPs get to hang out with everybody in D12 and everybody. And Carl Mundy shows up the next day looking for me, seeing like I called my brother to consult him. He's like, yeah, call him back in like 3 days when it's not news. Then you're good. And then I called him back in 3 days. It wasn't news anymore, and it was all good.
Another rough one was opening the envelope when we and getting sued for $5 million.
Oh, that was the big one.
Yeah.
That was the big one. That's federal precedence now. You can't actually even have a sponsored radio show unless you have $5 million worth of insurance coverage in the United States of America because of this one. Go ahead, Zeb.
Just in a nutshell, there was a couple guys drinking at the club one night, and one of the guys left after drinking. Probably was maybe might have been served a little too much, might not have been.
No, he had one drink at our place. Let me tell the story actually. He went to Becky's, then he went to the Rascal House. He had one beer at our place before the concert even started. It was 311, it's our favorite band. We were doing the 311 after party. 3 Days Grace was playing on stage. My girlfriend at the time cut the lead singer of 3 Days Grace's hair in the back in your office that night. We had a blast. It was an amazing show. 92.3 was sponsoring it. It got us all these freaking radio shows by us hooking up everybody. And then a guy went up the wrong way up the freeway and killed two people. It was a $5 million lawsuit. Yeah, it was crazy. And because of that precedence, we didn't end up, because of Great White burning down a building, we didn't have, insurance anymore. It was called, liability insurance anymore because of that. So we told Frangos, you have to change our lease because we can't, it's $63,000 more because Great White burned some building down. Well, because of that, we didn't have it anymore. I went to the deposition, told the guy, listen, sorry, we don't have $5 million. Here's my keys. Boom. You guys pay the bills. We're done. I walked out and then I text my attorney. Oh my God, I gave him my car keys too. Can you get my car keys? And he said, he texted me back. He's like, good job. You just settled the case for $3,500. And then we gave him $3,500 because we didn't have $5 million. And that was the end of that case. They went after 92.3 and the taxi cab company. 92.3 ended up paying. I don't know how much they paid. It was an undisclosed amount. But now radios, they went after the sponsor of the show. That's they'll go after everybody.
Yeah.
Surprised they didn't go after the guy that made the Peabody sign. You know who that is, but I'm surprised they didn't go after that guy. Yeah, it was crazy. That was a bad one. That was One of the reasons we, well, never mind.
So you guys remember, like, who you mentioned, like 311 and that being some of your favorite bands, but do you remember, like, what was your favorite performance that you got to have there and see?
Mine was Jay-Z for sure. Free Jay-Z concert after being principal for a day in the high school. We had the longest, he performed for over an hour with Beanie Siegel, Memphis Bleak, the whole Rockefeller family. He brought in his own sound system with the TRL signs like this of him. Then he put our sound system back and sound checked the bitch. He was the most professional person we ever had inside that spot. And it was hip hop, and it was the most professional shit we had ever seen in history. It was amazing. Jay-Z is the man. It was the
how did you guys manage
show
that?
Ever. It was a lot of fun.
They called us. He was principal for
Anthony
day.
Nicolaitis was, well, we were the whiteout, but Anthony Nicolaitis hooked it up actually. He was the Agora, one of the house.
Damn, we're losing you again, dude.
House of Blues had the Robert Randolph band that night at the, I froze up.
Yeah. So, we're getting good about Jay-Z.
The House of Blues, yeah. And they needed a venue, and he gave it to us completely for free. Yeah, but what was your favorite, Zeb? How about Girly, when me and you were the bouncers?
What's that?
We caught all the crowd surfers for Good Charlotte. Remember Good Charlotte for Halloween? Me and you were the bouncers that caught all the people?
Yeah.
Yeah. We were also the runners for Belly Dance Superstars. Those were good ones.
Yeah. One of my, like, the one thing that sticks out in my mind of, like, the show that I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing, was we had just installed this big circle truss of we had, like, this cool light show that our lighting guy had installed into the club, and we had My Life with the Thrill Call. And they owned the audience that night. Like the crowd that was there to see them, they just had them in the palm of their hand. And everyone, it just, the club looked so, I remember how good the club looked that night, and everyone was dancing, and it was just like the best vibe that, like, I ever experienced in the club at that time. That's one thing that always stuck out of my head, was that one particular show. But some of my favorite shows were also when Dan mentioned that we for Good Charlotte one night we were catching crowd surfers. That led me to start, every time we booked the Misfits, I became a security guard that night, and I got my whole outfit. I had got my military hat on, and I had my Peabody shirt, and I put my walkie-talkie on, and I got to be security guard that night, and I caught crowd surfers for every Misfits show. So I was always on the stage next to Jerry Only, and those were always my favorite shows too. And then anytime we had any type of 90s grunge band, 7 Mary 3, Local H, any 90s band.
You got to say Sponge. We had Sponge every other week.
Yeah. I was about to say Sponge, man.
It's like twice a year we had Sponge.
Yeah. Any band that took us back to high school, I was always there, like, as a customer that night, like, drinking in the crowd. I was there, you know, most nights I was there drinking, but the nights that we had those bands, I was there, like, as, like, an actual fan, you know, watching the show and drinking and having a good time. So those were some of my favorite shows.
I used to bartend every Red, White, and Blue show. That was just, it was a good audience. Uh-huh. They were a good audience. Miller Lite beers. It's all, you just open Miller Lite beers all night long. Yeah.
Snoop Dogg's birthday party was really good too. Upstairs in the VIP room, we had Snoop Dogg's birthday party, and that was really fun as well.
He goes, "Hey Dan, thanks for throwing my motherfucking birthday party. Now where the motherfucking hoes at?" And I was like, "Snoop, I'll be right back. I'll be right back."
and then his bus got pulled over in Toledo, and they got busted with a bunch of weed that our friend sold to him.
Yeah, true. That was the CNN story. That's a true story. And then also, remember the New Deal? They just like the My Life with the Thrill Kill called, the New Deal would, like, capture the whole audience like that. They had the craziest light shows. And Michael Franti and Spearhead, Michael Franti blew the – I was drinking, like, a couple Guinness to be like, what was going on? All of a sudden, I'm in the front row. I was supposed to be going home. It was a Tuesday night, and I'm dancing in the front row 15 Guinnesses later, having the greatest time ever.
Yeah, that was a good one. Those are all good ones.
Those were good ones. We had so much fun there.
Was a good one.
Danzig. I remember that when we did our first full page ad and it didn't have the date in it. I ran outside and kicked the dumpsters. I spent $1,000 on that ad and it didn't have the date in it. But I'm like, it's mysterious. It's mysterious. I got to make myself feel better.
And that was before that was social media.
The hardest shows. That was the hardest crew we ever worked with. Those guys were assholes.
Yeah, but Jamie Adler helped us out with that. He was the agent and Jamie hooked us through it.
Yeah.
He helped us through it all. Yeah, he was a dear friend of ours. Jamie and Kirk were very, very good to us.
I remember getting to hang out with Ice-T there with Pop. Me and Popson were hanging out with Ice-T.
Yeah. Up with his wife. With his wife.
Yeah.
With him.
Yeah, what was her name? Coco or something?
Coco.
Yeah.
Coco.
They were cool.
Yeah.
We had Blood. What was it? Blood. What was the name of his band?
Body Count.
Oh, Body Count.
Body Count. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, I had Coco magazines with me during deployment, man. They sold them at the PX, so she helped me out a lot through my deployment. It was nice.
Uh-huh. That's hilarious.
A lot of great Toots and the Maytal shows that Packy Malley would promote.
Those were the best.
Those were all
those
great.
Were the best. Those were so much fun.
Uh-huh.
He had so many in Sizzla and so many of the fun ones that we had. Oh, my God, you name it.
Zydeco was always were always fun.
We had so much.
A big dance party.
The spoons, we do the spoons. Oh, dude, that it was so much fun. That was just a great, great time. Music was just, it was about everyone, every walk of life there was. Peabody's, it didn't matter what it was. You were welcome. It was awesome.
Now, did you guys still own it when John Cena performed his rap show there?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah! Not only did we own it,
we did.
No, we probably didn't know we didn't own it anymore because I was off. I owned Gorilla because he wanted me to be his manager. I'm the one that put on the show. No, I put on the show.
Fozzie was there. We had it when Fozzie was there, but not Cena.
Yeah, when John's Gorilla put on John Cena's show. Greg Kelly helped me book that show, and that's how that all happened. I remember that actually. John Cena wanted me to like manage his music career and shit like that. I remember that. And he was in the make out room up in Rockstar, and we don't have to go there because it's a live show, and I'm not selling that guy under the bus. I'm not going to start now, or any rock star for that matter. Doesn't matter what walk of life you're in; it is what it is. It's that was your life, and that's what you want or what you do. It's I'm not.
I remember witnessing that.
He had fun. He had a lot of fun that night. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he did. I remember witnessing that up at the Rockstar, and. I'll tell you what, man, there's probably the Rockstar makeout room has probably more DNA in it than 23andMe.
That was a good one, Bill, but that's good. That's true.
Now, what,
there's a reason we called it that.
Oh, yeah.
That was a self-fulfilling prophecy for sure.
Yes. It's like the secret.
So, like, who would you say were some of your favorite? I mean, you mentioned Jay-Z already being very professional, but who are some of your favorite artists to work with that you always looked forward to working with them?
Mike Patton for me, 100%. He was the most professional. He would actually load in his own gear. He would settle his own show, and he could sell out every band that he named Fart Enable 2. Like, it didn't matter what the name of the band was. He sold it out, and we had Secret Chiefs 3. We had Phantom Moss. We had Mr. Bungle. We had all his different – we didn't have Peeping Tom. Agora got that one. But the thing was is that, like, we had so many of his different shows. He was just an incredible artist to work with because he was so humble. But it was like – that was, like, our niche of Peabody's too. So it was our niche and it was like the God of our niche was super cool. So it was awesome.
Yeah. He's definitely one of those heroes that didn't let you down when you meet him.
You know? No, he was cool.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Zeb?
David Allen Coe crew. I feel they were professional and they came in and they just knew what needed to be done. And they got the job done and it all went like clockwork, if I recall.
They treated me like family. They treated Larry like family, too, which was awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
I know. That's why I wish Larry was here right now. As soon as you mentioned David Allen Coe, I remember how much Larry loved those guys.
And he was, remember, he was the after-party DJ for the whole family and everything. It was awesome. That was so cool.
And I think
that's what Peabody's did to everybody, by the way.
Yeah. Local H, we booked them so much and they came through so much. They would always stay and we would party with them and they were always a good time to hang out with. They were just fun guys.
They definitely messed up our darkness show, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
And then who would you guys say was your like least favorite to deal with?
Least favorite to deal with?
I don't know if anybody specific.
There was one band that the bartenders didn't like that we had to change their name. They were called Lynchgate. I loved them, but we had to call them LG on the board. So my girlfriend at the time didn't know that I was booking the band because she wanted a band because they were mean to the bartenders one night. So I had to just change the band name on the time slot sheets to LG. And she wouldn't notice.
Even though we usually made a shit ton of money, the worst shows were always whenever we brought in a big hip hop group or a hip hop star. Those guys with their posses and their bodyguards and stuff and their demands.
That was my favorite. That was always my favorite. Me personally, that was my favorite. My numbers were the best. That was my job, and that was my favorite. Still to this day, I still do that shit. I still do the hip hop stuff.
Those guys had attitudes, though. I didn't.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but that's also why you don't get as much competition from Live Nation and AEG and the thing like that. So the independent promoter has an opportunity. And that's what the hip hop community gives that independent promoter. And it's incredible. I have phenomenal relationships with all the biggest local hip hop promoters still to this day in Cleveland, because they treated not only us so well, but me so well, that still to this day, I do business with all of them.
Not me.
Yeah, not Sam, but I do.
Sam won't even cook for him.
He will. The ones I'm talking about, he will.
Now, what would you say are some of the, if you're ready to let the cat out of the bag, what's some of the best kept secrets that you witnessed in that place that had to be like, nobody can talk about it? Is it safe to talk about some things now?
Ooh, I don't know if we want our wives knowing.
I remember hearing about things the next day with certain things showing up on the security camera, you know, because everybody go back and watch. What did we do the night before behind the bar?
Yeah, those are probably things we probably still should.
Those things we're talking about, Bill.
Dan and I had a drop safe that it took both. We had to take, we each put a key in at the same time and turn it simultaneously. We had a whole stack of VHS tapes in there. The night, I think, right before we sold the club, we went into that drop safe and we destroyed those tapes.
You guys were on that like the FBI on 9/11 camera footage, right?
We were on First 48 and we were making sure we were good.
I don't know if there's too many things we can really mention without, you know, incriminating ourselves or others.
I'll give you a good one, Bill. So one time I was bummed. We did the freaking Guns N' Roses reunion without Axl Rose. We had just played a flag football game that night. I'm sure we won because we were the champions that year. The thing was is that we came back, and my girlfriend at the time, Slash, comes down the stairs and tells my girlfriend, they're nice tits, and she gets all mad.
Back up, though. Velvet Revolver was playing at the Agora, and Slash's Snake Pit.
No, they were playing at Tower City. Velvet Revolver, Tower City.
They were playing somewhere.
Gilby Clark was playing at our place. It was Gilby Clark.
Yeah,
I was there that night.
And then there was one more. There's one more band. There was some other band that helped it out too.
I thought Velvet was at CSU, weren't they, at Wolstein? And then they came over after.
Yeah. Anyways, it was a Guns N' Roses reunion. I missed the show because I had to go home. There was panties in a bunch, and I was bummed that I didn't get to see Guns N' Roses. I read it in the Plain Dealer the next day, but I didn't actually see it.
I helped it happen. This isn't like anything like a bomb drop or anything, but Dan and I were in Los Angeles. Well, that was one thing that Peabody's allowed us at such a young age too, is, you know, us being friends for so long, we had a good staff running the club. Dan and I were like world travelers. We traveled to Europe and we traveled to Los Angeles and we went to Miami.
Austin City Limits, South by Southwest with lots of St. Paddy's Day money.
We had a good time, but we were in LA once and we get a phone call. It was pretty early for us, but it was probably like 3 a.m. Cleveland time or Eastern Standard. And it was our manager saying, it was Dan, Dan, Motorhead's here, and they want to have a an after hours upstairs. What should I do? And we were like, let them have an after hours. So Lemmy and all of Motorhead came. They were playing at the Agora, and they had a huge party after
hours. Ended up being with your brother.
Yeah, my brother up in the in Rockstar. we missed that one too. We missed a few good ones.
Dude, I was like in Seattle for some music fest in Guar and La Tigra. We had Guar one night and La Tigra the next night. I was in Seattle for us. I was like, oh man.
Yep. And I think we have Monster Magnet in that lineup too.
No, that was that when I got to see that because Alex took care of it because Monster Magnet's lead singer got sick, and then Alex knew he sang to the guy on the bus and he was like, dude, you actually could take my place. Holy shit. And yeah. Fucking Alex filled in for the lead singer. He's Alex from Red Giant.
Yeah.
Filled in for Monster Magnet, and we had the fucking show, and he saved us like $3,000-$4,000. It was awesome.
Nice.
That was probably my favorite local rock band was Red Giant over those years. They were kind of the ones that turned me from rocker or from raver to rocker.
And mine was Second Half because they were like a raver rocker.
Yeah, Second Half was cool too. I like those.
Yeah, guys. I love Red Drew. Giant
were the guys that I really jammed to and like got me into like that kind of that style of music.
That was yours. Mine was Second Half. Drew and Ed were awesome.
Uh-huh. I
and then
that
also
too.
Gil Manterra's Party Dream. If you looked in the band Bible, it told you your music niche, and Gil Manterra's Party Dream said Dan Call music. They used to roll around in their underwear with broken glass. I love those guys.
And what was the name of the like the band that you guys kind of put together?
The Busted Rubbers.
Of course, the
world. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Google the funniest band names. We're in the top 100, right next to the Butthole Surfers. It goes Butthole Surfers, then Busted Rubbers. You can Google it.
Tell them why we formed the Busted Rubbers, Dan.
To have a lot of fun.
No, we wanted to show all the local bands in Cleveland that you didn't need any talent to sell out a club.
You could do promotion.
We put a band together where we had a live drummer and we lip sync over the live drums and played a track over it. And
it was kind of a catch 22 though, because once we ran our first show, I like puked off the side of the stage and I was like, no wonder why these bands want paid. Shit. This is a lot of work.
well, we sold out the club. We sold out every show we ever played.
We did four shows and sold out all four.
Yeah.
Liquid was, we sent 1,000 people at Liquid Memorial Day weekend. That was ridiculous. That was the one.
We gave out free tickets for all our shows, and we would have bums selling free tickets out front.
For like $50. For like $50. Because we had $65 on the tickets because we were just kidding. It was part of the marketing gimmick was we give them out free, but they said $65 on them.
So they people out there getting a free $65 ticket. So bum tickets on themselves. We had a bum named Buckethead that he knew the system. So he would go out and he would scalp free tickets basically.
Nice. Now I remember the, I always enjoyed these too, the Cleveland Music Fest, when you guys would undertake that. You know, you want to talk about like the first one and what prompted that idea and just putting.
Well, actually, the first one was John and Dan's idea to have me have something to do because Peabody's was no longer, and I was booking Battle of the Bands in Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, and they were like, dude, we should work with all the other venues. We already book shows, and there's no Peabody's. So the first one was actually invented from the transfer from the East Bank to the East 21st. So that's how it was invented. Then the biggest and most popular one was we had like 17,000 people was when Fu Manchu headlined Peabody's and Past Blue Ribbon was the headliner. It was like 2003. Yeah,
2002 or 3. We literally put Past Blue Ribbon back on the map and made it cool again with that one event.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, man. We had so many people come out and it was a big event. We had like 17 stages. The year after we had like 21 stages. We lost money the year after actually, or broke even or something, but we made a fortune that year. It was the biggest one we ever done. And it was a big weekend and it was The music festival was off the chain.
And we were wine and dining all the agents from
LA. Oh, yeah. Michael Simon cooked for all the agents. We had like 13 record labels in town. It was amazing. Like, we really blew it up. It was like when Jeff Blue was freaking writing the first Linkin Park album and shit. It was pretty wild.
We were rock stars that year.
Yeah, I remember you'd have the what was it, like the board or whatever, when they would kind of like, they'd all sit at the panel speaking thing that
panel
they would
discussion.
Do.
I was always on the panel. Dan Bliss was a moderator, and then I became the moderator, but I was always on the panel.
Yeah, that was some good stuff, man.
Yeah, no one takes that kind of initiative anymore. Like, it took a lot of initiative to make those things happen, and, you know, bring the agents in and like try to educate these bands on, you know, how to become successful.
We spent $20,000 just flying the record labels in and putting them up in hotels. You know what I mean? So it was like, it was a big investment for to do that type of thing. And then the panels itself, it was like, we did like program guides and everything else. So people could, it was like a miniature South by Southwest is what we were going for. It just here in Cleveland.
And I mean, I remember you guys would get so much like flack for like, you know, just from bitter friggin' local bands about, like, you know, battle the bands and stuff like that. But I mean, for you guys to put that money in and bring actual professional label people in, you know, so they can learn how to take their game to the next level, you know, I mean, it just shows that you guys, how much love you had for the music scene to, you know,
a lot of passion. A lot of passion. You know? We did. And we wanted the best, because at the end of the day, it also rewarded us if we got somebody signed. You know what I mean? Like, Chimera, for instance, you know, I give myself a little bit of credit for that one. Like, not only were they the first Battle of the Bands winner at Peabody's, but they showcased with Hatebreed at the old Peabody's when they got their deal. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, like, I had nothing to do with it personally, but did I have influenced it, you know, without a doubt. You know what I mean? Salt the Wound was one of the ones from Cleveland Music Festival, from Rotten Records. He's my brother-in-law now. There's no way I didn't influence that. You know what I mean? So he's the reason, you know, he came into town. But, you know, the sign-offs, they had a deal actually signed before too, with, and then it fell apart with Matt Pinfield. And there was some other ones that were really, really close deals that were some stuff that would have been amazing. You know what I mean? Like, some artists that I did work with that I had record deals offered that didn't get turned, that got turned down. That it's a weird business. It really is. Like, when you get down to it, it gets real cutthroat, and it's difficult when you get to the major label level, especially when you're doing the intricate part of working with the band. And that's one of the things the music festival did, was we started educating the bands and literally doing that type of stuff as well too. And actually, I own a ticketing platform now called eventworks.live. That's a patented ticketing platform that does the time slots based on ticket sales, just like Peabody's. And you can go, I have a show at the Odeon this Saturday. It's got like 400 or 500 people coming, and it's literally the time slots are based on ticket sales, and you can see the time slots move just like at Peabody's, but it's real time. And I actually own the patent, and it's electronic, and it's the whole process that Peabody's used to do. And you can't really kind of blame it on ticket sales anymore, because the bands get paid. They no longer collect the money. They don't have to actually, they can't lose any tickets anymore. It's just QR codes. And if you sell 50 tickets, well, now you're making $5 a ticket. You make $250. It's not like we're paying you and you're paying part of the money and we're giving it. You're getting paid when you come to the show now, and you have to promote your own show, because nobody knows your audience like we do, unless you're going to give us, you know, your cell phone numbers and your phone and your Facebook password. We're not going to know who you are. It's not like when you go to the mall, you can say second half and everybody knows who that is. You know what I mean? Even though they're a big local band, not everybody at the mall. But if you say Mushroom Head or Bone Thugs and Harmony, well, then they're going to know who they are, and you can sell tickets at the mall. But for XYZ local band, that can't be done, unless it's the lead singer and he's, you know, he's going to tell you why he's so great and you should see him this Friday at Peabody's. But for me to tell you about XYZ band, you're not buying a ticket, because it's just not cool, to be frank. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know who the fuck it is, unless I can, there's a way to give that to you. But that's why local bands have to promote themselves, is because there's no choice. They're the only ones that know their network. You know what I mean? That's the truth. And now with Eventworks, it does it for you, and there's no postage. You don't have to mail out the tickets. Now there's no 3 days of waiting for the tickets. You can start promoting day one. The second you're booked on that event, you start promoting yourself. So a little plug for myself during this whole process. There you go.
No, that's good stuff. I remember, but back to the like Cleveland Music Fest, I loved it too, because you guys, because I had domain still going at the time and whatever, and you guys would hook me up with media. So, you know, I felt like I got to be a part of that VIP experience. And, you know, even though that was back during the dollar bill day, so some of the brain cells are still fucking kind of, you know, but it was a good time, man. I'm glad you guys did all that. But speaking of like those days, near-death experiences, how many of those did you guys have, or how many do you remember from there?
The one you fell off a rock star was a good one, or the one me and you got in the wrestling match in the back office was a good one. Uh-huh. We got a couple good ones that were definitely close, but go ahead.
This is kind of indirect, but when we were driving from Tijuana to the airport in LA,
that was a good one.
Blacked out, and I got pulled over and got a DUI and spent the night in LA County Jail. That was during the Cleveland Music Fest.
I had to fly home to do the check-in. What are friends for? I took all his luggage and left him in LA County Jail.
Did you mention when I dove out of the rock star balcony? Did you say that?
Yeah, I said something about it. Yeah, that was a good one though.
Our manager walked in the next day. The entire HVAC system was like completely down on the floor, and there was just passed out people everywhere.
Zeb had to he one-upped me from a bruise that he gave me. I was sliding down the bar and he pushed me off of it, and it gave me a bruise about like this from my knee all the way to like my hip. I had a bruise this big. And then he wanted to one-up my bruise because I had the biggest bruise in the history of Peabody's. And then he had a bruise from his head to his toes. It couldn't be beat from the one side of his body.
Now what was Can't going on beat. That you leapt off the balcony? Was there a show going on, or?
Probably just Monday night or something.
Monday night could do that at Peabody's.
Yeah, not. I don't think anything special. Just, you know, I'm sure Eric Runk was there, and it was just one of those nights. What a random night. That was the fun part about those days. Is, you know, every night was pretty much a weekend for us.
Nice being in your 20s.
Yeah.
I remember JC running wrestling shows there, and he had a guy that like jumped into the ring from the balcony up at Rockstar or whatever. And I thought that was the first time it happened, but now I guess you broke the seal on that.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of balcony jumping and stair falling. And if we remembered, then it probably wasn't that good of a stunt.
After one of JC's show, there was like blood that went by the bar. The health inspector came in the next day, and we were bringing the entire staff to Put in Bay right when he walked in. And we were like, oh, we're all leaving. He's like, I got a thing that there was blood. We had it inspected, and then we were good. And we tried to bring him with us to Put in Bay, and he called his wife and everything. And, hey, can I go with these guys? And we almost brought him with us, but his wife wouldn't let him do it. It was pretty funny when he walked in, too, let me tell you.
Yeah, you guys would have had a great write-up if you were able to take him with you.
Yeah, we did have a good write. He was a good guy. He was very nice, and what do you call it? Understanding.
And then let's see. So, you know, we mentioned a couple times when you did security at some of the shows and stuff, but you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about like the top-notch team that you guys had going on there. I mean, legendary status, the security team, and you know, you even had Ray Rowe go on to be, you know, wrestle for the WWE now as Eric from the Viking Raiders and stuff.
So Zeb can go next because he built the team. But let me tell you, when you say that, what happened to me with us? One time we did the CMJ. And me and Zeb had a picture of us in our underwear in a baby pool having a blast freaking downtown for the CMJ. And we were literally in our underwear, and we were the front picture of the plane dealer of me and him in his underwear. And we just had – our events were huge. All the clubs complained about CMJ coming to town. We did our thing and put the stamp on it and made a ton of money, and it fucking crushed for us. So we had so much fun. Well, we had Power Man 5000 that night, and I actually was downstairs. I had a little bit too much to drink that night, and obviously we were in the baby pool and everything, and I ate their rider, and I started eating their salad and everything. And Spider came down and he's like, thank God you guys have the greatest staff in the world. If you run this place, you would have ran this place into the ground, dude. You are crazy. What is wrong with you? And your staff is amazing. How'd you get these people to work for you? And I just had to tell that story before Zeb tells how he built the team. But it literally, Spider from Powerman 5000 thought we built the greatest team in the world and we were the biggest idiots on the planet.
I think what it was is it was just our age and the fact that we were kind of just, we were in it, you know, it wasn't anything, you know, we weren't reinventing the wheel. I mean, we were, I think, running ads on Craigslist and, you know, we just got lucky with, you know, the luck of the draw with good people coming in. And I was, you know, I had enough wherewithal to actually hire these people, but we were just all young and we were in it together and we were all having fun and we were all friends at the same time. And I think we kind of all grew up together. And I think it says a lot, you know, the fact that, you know, we hired a lot of the bartenders and a lot of the staff very early into our tenure. And even after Dan and I sold the place, I mean, you can go to the Agora today and there's still some of the same staff that transitioned from the old Peabody's to the new Agora to that is still there to this day. So, you know, I think one thing, having owned a lot of businesses after, you know, we sold Peabody's, is we kind of took it for granted a little bit, was how good the staff was and, you know, how lucky Dan and I were, like, going back, that we were able to travel and leave the club and, you know, leave it in good hands. Like, you know, I'm sure there were some shenanigans going on when we were gone, but we could leave the club and know that, you know, that the shows would be ran and people would be happy. And I think it says a lot to the team that we did put together, that it, you know, most of that team was intact when Dan and I sold the place still, and it's still they're still you know, there to this day at the new operation. So it was we were lucky, and it was just, I think, you know, the stars aligned, and just being so young and having fun and things coming together and treating people well. You know, that was always, I learned from my dad and from former bosses, you know, treat people how you want to be treated. And we always made sure when, if there was a show that we knew the bartenders weren't going to get tipped at, I would always come out and give everybody $100 even before the show would start. That way their mind, their moods would be good and they would be, you know, in the right mindset to be happy and serve people. And we just knew it was just important to take care of people. And like Dan said, we took them to Put in Bay and we partied with them, and we rented the VIP box at House of Blues.
I'll be right back. I grab my plug.
And we took, we took the staff and we had fun with them. And I think they appreciated that and they had fun doing it. So I think that kind of attests for why they were there for so long.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, I mean, it was like a family. It became like a family there.
Yeah.
And yeah, to this day, I mean, people still want to get together for like Peabody's. It's like, I would compare it to like being in my local unit I was in the military. We like to get together for reunions and reminisce about the old times. And still the staff at Peabody's is able to do that, you know, because of the relationships that you guys formed.
Yeah. And even after we sold it, I always enjoyed going, I always enjoyed going to the club and seeing everybody, you know, Tristan and Allison and Kevin and Larry and everybody that was still there. And, you know, I always felt like I was back home whenever we would go back up there. And then subsequently going to the Agora, seeing everybody still working there, you know, Tristan, you know, who had been there years, even before Dan and I were there working at the old club, you know, to see his old ass still working there, you know. And it was cool. It was always good to see those guys.
It was crazy. They changed the contract though. We had dollar beers, dollar shot, dollar drinks for just everybody. We would buy tons of shots for everybody. And then they changed it to $2 shots, so we wouldn't go crazy. And it's like, what do you mean? That's what's great about Peabody's. 25 shots down the bar. It was lots of fun. Lots of fun.
It was definitely, it was a great, you know, for being as young as we were when we got thrust into it, we had a very good 5-year college education on how to treat people, on how to run a business, and just, you know, on how to be an adult. So no college could ever have taught us, even though we did go to college. That was, you know, we got our bachelor's degree in life during those 5 years or 5.5 years that we had it.
Actually, yeah. Peabody's gave me an honorary degree at Tri-C as well for my work experience.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys, I mean, I could definitely attest, man, because, you know, you guys gave me plenty of opportunities when I booked shows. And a lot of times, I mean, I had a lot of bombs too, you know, but you guys always gave me the opportunities. You know, what was that?
So, yeah, you did.
Jaeger bombs.
Yeah, man. And then, like, you know, mentioned the near-death experience, like I said earlier, that there's a couple times I almost had a few there, but luckily you guys still let me come back. So we didn't get him the last time. Maybe we'll get him this time.
Don't worry. You weren't the only one. There was a handful of you guys.
Hey, Bill, they're all still our good friends, so it's a good thing. You're in good company.
Oh, yeah. So I wanted to ask, too, real quick. I know we've been going like an hour now, but if you guys don't mind, got a little bit more time.
I have to take a leak, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have to get my kids to bed.
All right.
My wife's doing all that work right now.
I'll ask this last one, and then we can get ready and wrap up here a little bit. But when you guys originally transitioned over to behind Rascal House, and it was just Peabody's, like, where'd the idea spring out? I mean, because Pirates Cove, like, has a history, too. Do you want to share a little bit about the history of Pirates Cove and how that got brought back to life there, and then what spawned Rockstar, and then having basically three clubs in one?
Well, this Pirates Cove was the second stage, and we kind of liked it being shitty so that the bands were motivated to sell more tickets to get on the main stage. And then we did the Pirates Cove because of 80s night. We built that club for 80s night specifically, but to be able to do live bands as well for a second stage and just make it better for them, for the groups that did have to play.
Club within the club. We were paying for the square footage. We were paying rent on the whole facility, so we wanted to take advantage of the whole facility.
And it gave you the patio access and everything else, too.
And there were nights that maybe we didn't have a show big enough to fill Peabody's and staff it and turn the air conditioning on. So we would put it in the smaller room, and it didn't feel like you were just on the second stage of Peabody's. You felt like we had a different entrance through the Rascal House, and you felt like you were in actually a whole different club. And I think bringing back the and I don't know how I'm sure Joe had something to do with it, but Pirates Cove was the club that was in the flats before Peabody's was Peabody's. So we thought by bringing that nostalgia back, we even had the original sign from the
idea, and Joe loved it basically because Joe was going to be our partner on the whole thing. And financially, it didn't work out for him. His ability to still do everything he did, he became still the same person. We just got paid differently, essentially. But he did a lot of the conceptual things, a lot of the bands, a lot of the events and all that stuff. So our general manager of Peabody's really had a lot to do with Pirates Cove.
He was like
Rockstar.
He was the face of the Pirates Cove. He was the emo punk rock guy that, you know, everybody wants to go see in his little, you know, side club basically. And so he was kind of the proprietor running it.
I would still help him. Like when I booked My Chemical Romance, I was like, dude, trust me, My Chemical Romance, it's going to be cool. They've got a lot of money behind them. This is going to be a good event. Trust me. And My Chemical Romance played the Pirates Cove with 170. We sold 400 tickets for that. We did Bleeding Through and My Chemical Romance in the same week in Pirates Cove. It was freaking off the hook. But the Rockstar was actually an inspiration from another club down in Miami when we were down in South Beach. We wanted to incorporate the bartenders entertaining the customers with dancing and dancers with cocktail waitresses all at the same time, splitting tips. Very, very similar to like a Coyote Ugly thing theme, but with a stage. So we could have a third stage, but also it was like an after party place. So like if the Killers played in town, they had a place to come, or, you know, Outkast played in town, they had a place to come, or, you know, Slipknot was across the street, they had a place to come. And by the way, all those people did that.
just a nicer place for these, like for some of the, like the bigger bands, and to have more like of a VIP experience, because you know, Peabody's was Peabody's, you know, shitty bathroom. So we spent the money upstairs to put in kind of a nicer place above Peabody's that we could send people up
to. You couldn't even punch the walls. We had brick. Yeah. We had walls like the garage was in. And then we had like little booths, like little VIP booths you could hang out in and stuff like that. And not just the makeout booth, but there was, yeah, it was just designed. We even had a VIP thing with TV screens that you could watch the stage, and you could watch Peabody's from like this little room from that room. And it was just, we built it with the concepts of having a good time when you come to a club. We were thinking about us because we like to go to clubs, and that's how we built it.
I remember the one time, because you mentioned Slipknot coming and hanging out, and that's when, like, you know, they're supposedly the Mushroom Head Slipknot.
Yeah, but everybody was hanging out.
We were all hanging out, drinking and talking. It's like, I mean, I pulled up my picture of hanging out with Joey Jordison that night after he just recently passed. It was like that. My time I got to hang with him was that night up at Rockstar and stuff.
They were buddies with Mushroom Head. There was no beef at all.
Yeah. And I remember too, I think Karatoma was playing downstairs, and like Lamb of God came over after playing a show at Wolstein.
Yeah,
and went on stage and played on their kit and everything.
J-Man brought Randy to my bachelor party at Redstone after we sold Peabody's.
Oh yeah.
Yep. We were all playing poker together, and Randy and J-Man came up.
Nice. Yeah, but I mean, just the off the wall stuff that you wouldn't. I mean, that happened there. It was amazing, dude. Definitely a good time. I got two more questions for you, and then we'll wrap up and let you guys go back to family life and stuff. But what is something that you guys still carry with you today that's like a positive strength you say you gained from your days of running Peabody's?
Can I go first, Seb?
Yeah.
Mine's persistency. I'm in sales still to this day with security and just real estate and everything else that I do. And one thing I am good at is following up, because bands that wouldn't sell tickets and shit like that, they wouldn't want to call me back. And I had to hunt them down and be like a stalker. And it's still with me to this day. And it's one of the reasons I'm a great salesman, is because I'm very persistent. And if you don't call me back, I get pissed off. And it's like a privilege to talk to me. And that's what Peabody's gave me. It's like, come on, dude, I've got a lot of experience. But in the music business, especially when I talk to bands, I expect them to want to call me back, because it's like, dude, I've done 15,000 concerts. How many guys are you going to talk to that have done 15,000 shows? Call me back, dude. I probably can help you. I've wrote a book on the business. So, you know, at the end of the day, that's what it gave me, was just confidence and the attitude of, you should call me back.
Yeah, I carried some of that persistency into getting this interview set up. How many times did I keep hitting you up about this?
It's what it takes, baby. It's what it takes. Yeah. How many times I say, I'm good, let's just do this shit.
Yeah. And I'm glad we were able to get you, Josh. So what was something that you'd say you carry with you today?
So I didn't really like have aspirations to be any type of entrepreneur or anything. You know, I was a chef, and my plan, I was working for like a famous chef, and my plan was eventually just, I was going to go to New York City and, you know, hopefully maybe open my own restaurant. But like, as far as being like any type of entrepreneur, those were not my aspirations. But once, like I said, we got our master's degree in life and business running Peabody's, it kind of, you know, gave me the bug. And from there, I opened up, we opened up Redstone after Peabody's, and we started a real estate business, and I started Cleveland Pickle, and it's kind of branched off. So, you know, I became my own boss when I was 22, and I haven't had a boss since. So, it's that, nice. You know, because of Peabody's and because of Dan kind of bringing me in to the mix, you know, it set the trajectory of my life in a whole different direction than it probably would have went had I not owned Peabody's. And, you know, I have the freedom. I've had the freedom for 20 years to do whatever I want, whenever I want, and however I want. So life is good. And
that's awesome.
Peabody's, it's because of that, of learning how to run a business and how to treat people and you know, be my own boss. And I haven't looked back since. So it was a good run, and it turned into a good trajectory in my life.
Nice. And I mean, you guys kind of both went into my final question, but like today, like what's everybody, what are you guys, what's your lives like today? You know, what are you guys all up to today? And what's life like
for you? I'm still a hustler, man. I got my eventworks.live. Go to eventwork, www.eventworks.live. You'll check out all the events I've got coming up at the Odeon, at the Vortex. I've got a bunch of different promoters now randomly even hitting me up about using the whole ticketing platform. Still promoting hip-hop events. Then I sell security full-time. And for Virtual Guard, I'm a senior security consultant. It's a company that does virtual security for car dealerships and scrap yards and manufacturing sites and gated communities. Then I'm a realtor. I'm a general contractor. I'm a landlord. I have a bunch of rental properties. I'm a real estate investor and flipper in both Ohio and in Pennsylvania. So I've got 7 jobs. I've got 4 kids under the age of 13, and I hustle every day. That's what I do. Nice. Just like Peabody's, baby.
And I'm happily married with 2 little kids. And I own a company called the U.S. Foods Group. We're a product development company. We make pickles. So I have 3 different pickle brands that we distribute nationally to retail chains, restaurants, and wholesalers. I have the Cleveland Pickle brand, I have the Pickle Co. brand, and I have the Prego Pickle brand, where we just started selling the nationwide, the Bye Bye Baby. So I kind of went back to my food roots. I went from the rock and roll dude to the pickle king of Cleveland. So we realized that there's a huge market for pickles and all things pickled, and we were hustling again. I was hustling at farmers markets for a couple of years, you know, just working the local scene. And we attracted an investment group a couple of years ago to form this new corporation. And now I have nationwide distribution, and we're selling tens of thousands of units of pickles to all kinds of different people, from mommies to Jewish people to all kinds of different people. So it's cool. It's a cool way to earn a living. It's a very unorthodox job, and I enjoy it a lot.
Nice. And I got 2
grown. No pun intended.
Yeah. And I got 2 grown daughters, and I do a podcast to try and remain relevant.
There you go.
Nice.
But hey, man, I appreciate. I'm glad we were able to make this happen, man. Just in time for the anniversary of
me too.
How many years has it been? What year was it that got shut down?
Man, I'd have to get on my Facebook. I mean, it kind of, I don't know how long it's been, but around the 29th, every Facebook reminds
it's
me.
It's been,
you
16
know?
Years, I think, since we and you sold the place. Let's see.
Well, we sold it in 2005, so.
Yeah, 16 years. 16 years. 16 years.
Yeah, 2012 or 2013.
Yeah, it's probably been gone for about 7 or 8 years, and we sold it 16 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Another lifetime ago.
Crazy shit.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, man, I appreciate you guys coming on and doing this, man. And it was good to virtually see everybody. And hopefully we'll connect again soon, man.
Cool. Let's do it, man. We'll get Larry on too, man. Let's do this.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Thanks for having us, Bill.
Thanks for having us, Bill. It was a great time.
Hello, and thanks for listening to today's Boondoggle. And now, for your listening pleasure, Florence Whitingale presents his latest epoch.
Emphasizing that shit, you know, holding too tightly of a grip, and like crabs in a barrel, they're continually pulling themselves down. So the question I'm asking all y'all brothers right now is this: what are you doing today that'll better your tomorrow? And take that pussy you got right now and turn it into gold. I said, what are you doing today that'll better your tomorrow? And take that pussy you got right now and turn it into gold. Well, come on.
you hit it like a gong? Is you loving it? Is you hugging it? You better be stroking like Clarence Carter. Set yourself up to be a sexual martyr. Yeah. Is you kept trailing? Is you smooth sailing? Is you cunnilingo teaching? Hope you practicing what you're preaching. Is you rocking them thighs? Is you slipping them Spanish flies? You better become a penny dropper. Rock them in their third chakra. All right. A motherfucker, all right. Now come on. What are you doing today? That'll be your tomorrow. And take that pussy you got right now and turn it into gold. I said, what are you doing today? That'll be your tomorrow. And take that pussy you got right now and turn it into gold. Come on. You know it don't matter what you do or what you say. If she don't love you, there's no way. So maybe the next time you'll give your woman a little respect, or you'll be hearing her say, no way, no way. Making them scream and sigh as they unzipping your fly. Is you working it? Full time slurping it. Hope you receiving sexual gazes, releasing them tigers from their cages. Rawr. Is you tantalizing it? Compartmentalizing it? Is you kissing on that ass? Wrapping you up like sassafras? Is you sticking it? Cold lip and licking it? Hope you flipping that ass like IHOP, got them screaming, making the eyes pop. All right, a motherfucker, all right. Now come on, what are you doing today? That'll better your tomorrow. We take that pussy you got right now and turn it into gold. I said, what are you doing today? That'll better your tomorrow. We take that pussy you got right now and turn it into gold. Oh, come on. You know it don't matter what you do. What you say? If she don't love you, there's no way. So maybe the next time you'll give your woman a little respect, or you'll be hearing her say, no way. Is you macking it? Is you smacking it? Is she rubbing them crystal balls? Ooh, what's that moaning in the hall? Is she gripping it? She deep dipping it? You better be listening to my rapping so you can start some spinal tapping. All right, a motherfucker, all right. So come on, what are you doing today? That'll better your tomorrow. And take that pussy you got right now and turn it into gold. I said, what are you doing today? That'll better your tomorrow. And take that pussy you got right now and turn it into gold. Come on.
Show.com. But for now, feel the flow exclusively here on today's Boondoggle.
That was the same, was that the Tammy Ann time?
Oh, wait, no, that wasn't when, your family came down.
No, right?
No, that was a different time. Yeah, because we all rode in the van together.
Yeah, we rode in the van together.
How about when we rode in the van?
And what about the U-Haul?
Lester, oh, the U-Haul trip from back up from Camp Lejeune.
South Carolina?
Camp Lejeune. But Lester with the fart thing.
Oh, yeah.
The fart machine.
And some, it's got to be something with the freaking...
Something electronic.
Yeah, it's got to be something electronic.
Sorry, turn the freaking van. It was too easy. Like, you weren't even in the building.
It doesn't matter.
Thank you.
Listen, his wife got the alert.
I was going to say, I'm already in trouble.
She just called.
Yeah, I just got...
She just called. She got the alert. He's spending too much money on the car.
You realize how much trouble I'm in now?
That's okay. Hey, no. Don't let him push it.
You go.
I just wish I could have seen a look on his face. I mean, I could see him going over that look.
I'm going to take a picture of it and send it to her.
She's fine.
I'm
going to
take a picture with her.
I'm getting a divorce.
I'm really
it doesn't
sorry.
Matter.
So you will be back.
He's always won. It's what he's always won.
You're going to get divorced, so you will be back. Just can't go out with Danny.
He wanted one of them for Christmas.
He just wanted another bachelor party.
Yeah.
They're not mine.
You're going to be working Saturdays and Sundays forever.
A long time.
Just for this one.
That was funny. You're looking down at that like...
Scratching his head going, 1 + 1 = 2. Wait a minute.
Hold on a second. Three, over here. We're all watching.
Something is wrong here.
I know my math is not great.
But I do recall, I think one prime rib evening, when I checked out of the North Olmsted pub, I do recall that I had a bar tab that was quite high.
Oh, you must have drank a lot that night.
Not as much as was on that tab. I didn't say anything at the time because...
Well, they ripped you off, man.
They tabbed you?
No, bullshit. I think...
We wouldn't have done that.
And he says it with a straight face.
As far as you know, we wouldn't have done that.
Yeah. I'm with him. I don't remember anything
no.
like that.
Foggy.
I think I paid for the drinks all night long.
Yeah. How much was it?
Oh, it was about $65.
Playing the role of Lothar tonight will be.
Was it a special occasion?
Playing the role of Ozzy.
You know what? Here's.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/todaysboondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.